This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
What is up, my loves? It is Lala Kent on the Give Them Lala podcast with Randall. Here we are. I can't believe that we have a legend on the podcast today. She is best known for her role on Full House. Yes. And then Fuller House. And she's also a part of my little tribe in sobriety. So we're going to keep this intro very short and sweeten.
Oh, you just gave it away.
It's my mom joke. We have Jody Sweeten. Yes, we're going to deep dive into all things Jody. I can't wait to pick her brain, know what it was like to be a child star and what her journey has been in sobriety and helping others. So
we have Jody Sweeten on today, which we're both excited about because Full House was my generation. And Fuller House is your generation. Did you ever see Full House when you were younger?
Yeah, of course.
You saw Full House?
Oh, yeah.
But you had to be like 0 or 2 years
old. I think it came out before I was born, but I've definitely seen it. I'm a huge Olsen twin fan, so.
Well, we are very excited to have Jody Sweeten today. She is a total legend on every level. I think, how old was she when she was on the original?
I think she may have started at 4 or 5.
And now
she today. She was definitely young.
And today she is? Probably.
Damn, I think she might be like in her late 30s.
And that, you know what's amazing? To be on a TV show that was one of the biggest hits in television for whatever amount of years as a child, not even being able to remember it, you know what I mean? Because at 4 or 5, what do you remember? And now being again like reinvented in the same show. Has that ever happened before?
I think it's really hard to recreate a show that has already existed and kind of do some sort of sequel to it. So when I saw Fuller House, I was actually shook at how good it was, how cute.
I didn't even see it. It's that good? It's fun?
Yeah, it's definitely cute.
Well, I'm excited to have her on. I'm excited to have this podcast today and to just celebrate your sobriety and her sobriety. Because this week is your 3 year sobriety.
Yep, I'm gonna go with my girlfriends to celebrate 3 years on Friday. Again, it's one day at a time, but I fully intend on celebrating on Friday my 3 years of sobriety. I've come a very long way. Tonight I'm finally getting to do the signing of my book, Give Them Lala, which is huge. Thank you. I'm going to have a little get together after with my girlfriends. Just it's a week of really celebrating
you,
the cool shit I've done.
And I want to say something about your book. The fact that you launched your book in a time of a pandemic where there was no, you know, like interaction with your fans. I give you a lot of love and a lot of respect, and I'm really proud of you. So kick ass tonight with your book signing party. It's going to be a big night for you. So you deserve it.
Yeah.
So I take off my hat to you.
Thank you. I'm very excited. I hope everyone enjoyed last night's episode of Vanderpump Rules. We're going to cut to a short break and we will be back with Jody Sweeten.
$0 delivery fees. I bet that made you listen. Yes, I said $0 delivery fees. That's what you get when you Dash Pass by DoorDash. And if you don't know what Dash Pass is, I'm about to change your world. Dash Pass is an exclusive membership that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders, along with members-only deals and discounts. Dash Pass is the most affordable way to get food from your favorite restaurants or groceries or whatever else you need delivered right to your front door. Dash Pass basically pays for itself in 2 orders on average. Plus, Dash Pass gives you special access to exclusive promotions and menu items, all for just $9.99 per month. Get more from delivery for less with Dash Pass, $0 delivery fees, and reduced service fees on eligible DoorDash orders. Sign up for Dash Pass today and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. subject to change. Terms apply. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for Dash Pass today, only on DoorDash, and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change. Terms apply.
So I have two game changers to share with you when it comes to upping your glam game. I am totally obsessed with Impress No Glue Manis and Impress Press-On False Eyelashes because I'm very into just easy right now, and anyone can do it. You are going to love them just as much as I do. Both require zero glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes. There's also no annoying dry time. And the best part, zero mess. One step and you're done. The lash style options are endless, and there are so many on-trend nails to choose from. Impress, No Glue Manis, and Press-On Falsies are the easiest and fastest way to upgrade your look in just minutes. The Press-On Falsies have a unique under-lash application for a totally seamless look and are made with an exclusive self-stick technology that keeps them secure for up to 24 hours. The Impress Manis have a patented super hold adhesive for up to 7 days secure hold, and that's perfect for all of you busy mamas out there who don't have a lot of time to spend on glam but want to look your best. I completely get it. Impress No Glue Manis and Impress No Glue Press-On Falsies are absolutely a beauty must. You need to try them right now, so get yours today at impressbeauty.com/Lala. And use code Lala at checkout for 25% off Impress Manicure and Press-On Falsies. That's impressbeauty.com/Lala and use code Lala at checkout for 25% off.
We are back with Jody Sweeten. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Randall loves
a
good clap.
Thank you for the round of applause.
So I have to say, you obviously, I grew up watching you on TV, and it's so crazy that my
Hold on. Let's stop.
No, we're going to jump in, but I have to toot my guest's horn before we move on. Because
toot away, my friend. I'll take your compliment any day.
So then my two stepkids, not only are they obsessed with Full House, they're obsessed with Fuller House. Is it so crazy that you have a show that stands the test of time?
You know, it really is. I know there have been a ton of reboots, and, you know, some have been super successful and some kind of came and went. But Fuller House was really one of the first of those, I think.
And it really took a chance.
You know, we pitched it to a lot of places, and they were like, you know, we think there's an audience for this. And we knew it as cast members. We were like, you guys have to tap into this. Like, there's such a huge audience out there. And I'm so grateful that something that I love to do, that I've had so much fun doing, that has been such a wonderful part of my life, has connected with people in the way that it has. Yeah. You know, Full House is something, I mean, I'm so grateful for the fans and that I got to come back and do this as an adult. You know, I had sort of walked away and was in normal person land. You know, I was, wow. I had a normal job and was just doing my deal. And then this opportunity came along. So it's been quite a wild ride.
Wow. So when you say you had a normal person job, what was that?
I was working in treatment. I worked at several treatment centers. I was a director of operations. So I had, you know, gone back to school and gotten my certificate for drug and alcohol counseling. I was working in drug and alcohol treatment. And I really thought my plan was going to be more moving into case management and becoming a therapist, which is still, that's the thing that I would probably love to do, you know, other than my acting.
Right.
But I was a director of operations. I had, you know, a big staff of people under me and was trying to run the daily operations of a lot of recovery houses. And, you know, it was fun and it was a challenge and it was something that I had never done before.
Right.
And then, you know, I'll say when I was directing, I got to direct an episode of Fuller House. I realized how much more confidence I had because I had been in a position of kind of running something before.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, it's just a lot of moving parts. Like, I can do this. And it was amazing to me. I was like, oh, I'm so grateful for that period of my life.
That's amazing.
I just want to say, first of all, you said you grew up on that show.
Yes.
I am old. I grew up on your show. Okay. She was like zero. Okay. Now I know she's a fan because she does watch with her stepkids.
Fuller House.
She does watch it religiously. Like, she is in there. She educated them.
I love it.
And by the way, I never thought like my seven-year-old and my 11-year-old would ever. And then they come home like, we're watching Fuller House with Lala. And
it's, well,
like,
then I had to educate them and show them that it was a show before. Right. And then they became obsessed with that.
Yeah, they've got to get a little bit of the history. I mean, the thing about Fuller that was sort of nice that we tried to do was like, you could just start watching that show.
Right. Anywhere.
Necessarily, like, it helps to have the background of the first 8 seasons, but it wasn't necessary.
Correct.
100%.
Whole new feel, but yeah.
But what I like about Law is that she really does love, like, old school shit.
Throwbacks.
So, like, she likes the throwbacks. So the fact that my kids are even educated now is just the coolest thing. But I did grow up on your show.
I love it.
And in 1987, I was, you know, rocking it at like 16 years old, 17 years old. So I was in it to win it when you, like, were, what, zero? Like, 3 on that show? How old were you when you started?
I started that show when I just turned five.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Five, yeah.
So tell me, because obviously I've been in the business a long time now, not from when I was 5. What is it like to be on a show for 8 years or whatever it was, and then another 5 years? Like, when you walk down the street at that age, do people know you everywhere? Was it like that kind of mayhem of celebrity?
Well, yeah, when I was younger, like I'd say in like the 5th, 6th season, it got real, like it was everywhere. Right. And then, you know, when Fuller House came out, I mean, we did such a huge launch. Yeah. We were traveling all over the place. And then, you know, subsequent seasons, we traveled to Japan and we did a lot of stuff. And it is crazy. I mean, it's crazy to go to a foreign country and get in a cab in Japan and watch yourself on the TV in the cab dubbed over in Japanese.
Wow, that would be crazy.
Fans like literally sleeping at your hotel. Like, it's,
yeah, that's,
you know,
nuts.
That kind of stuff to me is wild nuts. When I think about it.
Of course.
I don't live like some fancy, crazy life. I like my normal life.
Totally.
And so it's just funny to me when I'm like, oh my God, people know who I am. That's so weird.
Right. Like, you have kind of an out of body experience and you're like, what is life? I'm really confused. So at 5 years old, you start on this show, you know, at that point in time, that's when most kids, I would say 5 is when they like start playing teacher, you know, whatever they've seen, they play dolls. When did you know, like, I want to be creating characters and be on TV? Like, did it just fall in your lap?
I was like 3 years old when I told my mom I wanted to be on TV. I used to call the people on TV modelers, and I would say, Mommy, I want to be a modeler. I really want to be a modeler. And I was, you know, I was the kid that, you know, would run into the room of adults with a harmonica and start playing some little made up song and sing for everyone and then be like, and thank you, and, you know, exit the room. I pushed my way to the front of my first dance recital because apparently I thought that the girls in the front were just not
bringing it
up to snuff.
Right.
So, you know, if my mom saw things like this and she saw, you know, I was extremely luckily bright for my age. I mean, I was fully reading by the time I was 3 years old. I could read books, I could do all that. So, you know, when I was auditioning and stuff, I was a 4-year-old who could walk into a room and hold the script and read it. And, you know, there were not many kids at that age that could do that. So I loved it from the beginning. It was always something I wanted to do. I loved to perform. And being somebody whose brain works in hyperdrive most of the time, I needed a lot going on. I loved excitement and change and creativity and all of that. So it really was, I think, for me, the perfect place to come of age.
Right.
And, you know, it brought with it its difficulties too.
Well, I was going to say,
you're like the normal existence, but
when you were 10, 11 and you're at the height of your fame for that show, right, which I assume is like 10 to 12, you were like thriving.
Yeah.
You walked that way. I mean, where do the difficulties lie there? Because being a 10-year-old, like for my daughter, being an 11-year-old, you know, we go to the mall and the biggest conflict she'll see or the biggest weirdness she'll see is people will come up to Lala or they'll come up to me and say, oh my God, we like you or we're fans of that show, whatever.
Right.
But to be the person at 11 years old where they're coming up to,
right,
that's got to be just awkward on every level. Is it not? Or are you getting used to it?
Yeah, for sure. I you know, it's funny because as outgoing as I am, I definitely can be an introvert. I definitely, right, like, you know, growing up, there were times when it was like, oh my God, I wish, like, I just want to blend into the wallpaper. Right. I just want to be in the background, you know, because every new class that I went into or new school that I went into or, you know, went to the mall, it was like never, you know, I couldn't go, you can't go out to eat with your family and not have someone interrupt you while you're in the middle of eating.
Totally.
And,
right.
You know, the thing was, as a kid, it was really hard because I don't know. And I guess even as an adult, like I said, I'm like relatively ambivalent and sort of unimpressed by celebrity and fanciness and all of that. So like, it's just so crazy to me when people come up and I'm like, oh my God, like, it's weird. And as an 11-year-old kid, I don't think you can really process sort of that loss of privacy.
Correct. Yeah.
But I will say I am forever grateful that I grew up in the era before smartphones.
Correct.
I hated as a kid. It was one of the things, and still to this day when paparazzi do it, it's one of the weirdest things is when someone's taking your picture when you're just trying to exist.
Yeah.
And it feels so invasive. And I remember feeling like that as a kid, feeling like there were times when I was like, I don't want to be on, you know?
Right.
But also knowing and being so incredibly grateful for those people and hearing those stories and seeing people that the show meant so much to, I felt that as a kid, you know, being a very empathic, sensitive kid, like I took that on. Wow. And so I knew almost that there was like this big responsibility of what the show meant to people.
Right. You
and
had
I was
like that.
So grateful for that.
Right.
But I also had times when I was like, I just want to like walk into a room and like slip in and not have every kid in the room go like, oh,
you know, right. Like that had to be enough. Like, what? Yeah, what a conflict weird. To battle as an 11-year-old where you're like, I just want to be normal. But then you have people that are like, your show is changing my life. It's like, and you want to be able to say, I don't want all of this. That's cut. Like, I just want to do my art.
Right. And, you know, I don't know that at that age that it even felt like that. I think sometimes it too is almost more reflective when I think about it. At the time.
Right. You were just in it. You were just in it.
At the time, it was just my existence. I didn't, you know, for me, 5 to 13 was when I was on Full House. And so that was like my formative years, right? That was all of my elementary and middle school years. So I don't really have a whole ton of life and memories before these people were in my life, and before that was just sort of what I did.
Mm-hmm.
Really until I was an adult that I was like, oh, I see those feelings, and seeing where that
led
you, pleasing, and you know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I can talk to you guys about this. You know, this journey of getting through life and sobriety and all that kind of stuff. But I think as an adult, you reflect on it and you're like, oh, I see where this desire to, I just want to make everyone happy because that's my role. And that's my job, where that came into play. And at the same time, like having an awesome childhood, you know, I was surrounded by love. Our cast was amazing. I get to go to the White House for luncheons and
travel. I mean, to do that as a kid.
Bob Saget. I mean, it doesn't get any better. Bob Saget.
It's true. Like, I had these amazing things, too. Yeah. So it wasn't like somehow I hated it and just, like, plugged through it. It was what made me feel alive, and I never feel more at home than I do when I'm on set.
When
you realize, like, oh, yeah, not everybody went through that, it, you know, you realize you have a very different perspective of life.
Yes, 100%.
When the show ended, this is a question, when you're 13 years old and you've been in this crazy machine, you know, big publicity machine, big, you know, you're at a studio every day taping,
right.
You know, your life is the farthest thing from normalcy, but it was your norm.
Right.
What happens when it all gets quiet for a minute, you know, and you're 13 years old? I mean, is it easy to adjust into the next transition?
I mean, there's definitely an adjustment period, but I think at that point, you know, I was just starting high school, and I was really fortunate in that our producers worked with us as kids to make sure that we were able to, if we wanted to, attend normal school.
Oh.
And it also worked out really well for me because I grew up in Orange County, so we had a bit of a commute, so the producers were like, look, we can't work the kids that long anyway on rehearsal days. Just come in, it'll, you know, at noon, it'll be less traffic. We'll get here at 1, we'll rehearse the kids' scenes, and then you go home. So I was fortunate in that by the second season when we moved, or the third season when we moved to a 4-day work week, I was in school all day Mondays, and then half days Tuesdays and Wednesdays, and then Thursdays and Fridays I was schooled exclusively on set for tape days. But I still had I got to do a lot of the normal pieces.
Yeah.
So I'm always grateful for that, because I do know that, again, in that regard, I had a different experience than a lot of kids in this business, in that they had no access and kind of quote unquote real life experiences. You know, I had a little bit of both, and I'm always so grateful for that, because I lived a really grounded, normal life in that regard. You know, it wasn't, I grew up around normal people, and I liked it that way. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were either of your parents in the arts?
No. My mom, you know, she was a stay-at-home mom with me, but she had been, gosh, everything from a, you know, school bus driver to a secretary, you know, down in Long Beach Harbor. My dad was a superintendent of a gypsum plant, which is where we get drywall from.
Oh, my God.
He worked there for like 47 years. My dad's quite a bit older, has adult children as well. But yeah, he was a blue collar worker, worked down at Long Beach Harbor, came from Oklahoma post Depression era, like was a migrant farm worker at 12-13 in the
and
Central Valley.
Here comes this kid with a huge personality.
From a real normal family, and I'm so grateful for that. I learned a hell of a work ethic too from
of
both
course.
Of my parents. So.
Did you know today is a great day to warranty? Well, actually, every day is a great day when you're not worrying about your appliances and home systems. And that's what you get with American Home Shield Warranty. I signed up with American Home Shield the moment I decided to buy my house. With an American Home Shield Warranty, unexpected breakdowns like a leaky faucet or faulty water heater won't break the bank, because covered repairs and replacements are taken care of just like that. And not by me, my mom, or Easton. We wouldn't know the first thing to do if something stopped working in this house. I just contact American Home Shield when a covered item breaks, and their trusted and qualified pros will fix or replace it based on the coverage limits in your agreement. So having that sort of reassurance from American Home Shield is something to celebrate. When it comes to protecting your appliances and home systems, don't worry, be warranty. Visit ahs.com/GTL today to get 20% off any plan. That's ahs.com/GTL for 20% off any plan. For more details, see ahs.com/contracts for coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty, which may be provided by the home builder or manufacturer.
The weather is getting warmer. Summer is coming, finally. And you know what that means? It's time to put all of the jackets and all the sweaters in the back of the closet and pull out all of your shorts and tees. And I know you all want some new looks for the warm summer sunshine, and you don't want to break the bank in the process. I get it. We want to ball on a budget. So do what I did and shop Quince. Now, I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking so chic year after year. Quince has premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts starting at $30. You can find silk tops, 14-karat jewelry, and so much more. All Quince items are 50 to 80% less than many similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts the cost of the middleman and passes all of those savings on to us. I did just get myself a fabulous cashmere tee in cream. It is so soft and yummy. It's probably just as soft as the Quince waffle towels that I got for Palm Springs. We absolutely love those towels. So get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/Lala for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Lala to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/Lala.
So how soon after, you know, you wrap filming this show that has been a huge part of your existence, and did you turn to, if you don't mind me asking, drugs and alcohol?
I mean, I think it was, you know, look, there was this convergence also of like all of the peak things of early teenagehood coming together, right? Which was hormones, which was, oh my God, I'm in high school now.
Right.
Yeah, you know. Sorry, I don't know if I can.
Yeah, you can curse.
Yes, you're good.
Yeah.
We don't get
But, you know, you're like, fucking cool, man. Yeah. Here we go. I'm going to be, I know everything now. And you're 13. And, like, now that I have a 13-year-old, I'm like, oh my God. Oh, I knew nothing. I was such a fucking child. You know, that combined with the normal identity crisis of most 13-year-olds, which is, who do I want to be? Let me try on these different personas and people and friend groups and all of that. And then I had something that most kids don't have, which is I lost my job. I lost my everyday routine existence for 8 years in a rather sudden way. You know, Full House, we didn't have very long. I think it was like the last 3 weeks we knew we were getting canceled.
Oh, wow.
So we didn't even go into the season knowing it. We thought it was going to get picked up and it didn't. And there was back and forth, maybe WB would. So it was kind of a sudden loss. But it was also at the same time like, oh, I can just start this new chapter. But what I soon found was everyone expected me to be Stephanie Tanner.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, let's just be the least Stephanie Tanner like that we can to prove a point. You know, so
you had a rebellious
like
phase.
But it was kind of the same shit as everybody else was doing.
Right, because you were in high school. You were in high school, so it was like you said, the convergence was like, it was just the perfect timing of you lost
it's
your job.
The normal shit that starts anyway, and then add on like this extra layer of a real interesting life shift for someone who doesn't have the emotional capacity to really even think about it at that age.
Correct. Correct.
So you start this rebellious phase of like, I'm not fucking Stephanie Tanner. I'm Jody.
Right. And it was like, I'll be just as bad as you. I'll do the same stupid shit you do. But, you know, it's different when it's you. You know, and I remember my mom always saying, like, people will always be watching.
Yes.
People will always be watching. And that's, like, kind of a shitty mentality to grow up with. Although I think now in the age of social media, I think most of our kids feel that way anyway.
That's true.
But, you know, it always was different. It wasn't just like, oh, that, you know, freshman girl got drunk at a party. It was, dude, did you see Joey Sweeten, the girl that was Stephanie Tanner, get drunk at that party?
Totally.
Like that, you know, it was a thing. And so I think I found that thing that just made me feel like I didn't give a shit.
Okay, I can totally relate to that.
It was alcohol.
Yeah.
I finally was like, oh, wait, here's the key to where I can feel like I don't give a shit. I don't, you know, nothing matters. I don't care about your judgment of me. You know, all of that kind of stuff that, thank God at 39, I now have, you know, worked through and processed and actually have. But yeah, 13, it was, you know, that was the thing.
So you started drinking at 13. When full alcoholic at 13, 15? When did it get to the point where it was unmanageable?
I would say by 15 or 16. I do remember at one point there was a moment when I said to my mom, I was like, I think I'm an alcoholic.
Wow.
And of course at 15 or, you know, 16, and I was drunk when I was saying it. So, you know, like, I think my mom was probably like, what the fuck you are? You're just being an idiot.
Right.
You know, but I think at an early age, I always knew, and I know so many people in sobriety talk about this, you know, alcohol did something different for me than it did for other people.
Right.
I didn't react to it. Like, my friends would get drunk, and then they're like, oh, that's it. And
that's like me. That's like me. That's like
more.
Me.
More.
Yeah.
Like, when I'm done, I'm like, you know, Saturday I wake up, I'm like, I never need to drink for, like, months, you know? Yeah.
Whereas me, I would wake up, and I'd be like, where are the Bloody Marys? Where our eyes are open. Why are we not drinking?
Yes.
You know?
Right.
So at what point did it spiral into something?
15, 16. Correct.
Is when it spiraled into something more.
It started getting worse. Then I got sober the first time when I was 18.
Wow.
I started college, and I did not get off to a great start that freshman semester. I talk about it in my book. I had a 0.9 GPA, which
is my God.
Really hard to get under a 1.0, but I did it. That's just, I didn't do anything.
What school?
Drink and party. Like, I all of a sudden had this freedom, and my parents knew this about me, and they're like, you have to come home on weekends.
Okay.
Come home on weekends. So I was like, well, shit, that really cuts into my partying time. But now I've got Monday through Thursday. And like that was what.
So we really got to live it up Monday through Thursday.
Wow.
And what, right. And what school were like you at this time?
Whatever, you know. And then I knew at some point, like it just got to a place where I was like, oh, I'm in trouble. Like
yeah.
It really, you know, I was 18 and I was like, yeah, I am not like most of these other people here drinking. Like this is getting serious. And, you know, it wasn't easy to get sober at 18. Starting college, I remember rushing a sorority and then I was like, what am I doing? One, I don't like hanging out with like these kind of people. And two, like, the fuck am I going to do in a sorority? It's all they do, you know, and it's not all they do, but like,
at that time,
it's a
at that
part
time.
Of it, right? Yeah. It's a part of that college experience. And I was like, well, I don't want to do this. I was really uncomfortable. So, you know, it was a struggle. And there's been lots of back and forths in my sobriety journey. But I always say, like, it started for me then. And I'm so grateful because it planted those seeds of thought in my head that it could be different.
Yes.
So every time I would go back out to do more research or say fuck it and go get loaded, those things and those people were always in my head of like, hey, well, you know, that's you do that, but like just remember this, you know.
And totally.
Like, oh, wow, it's not
when was your last when was your last time out where you that was it?
Oh gosh, well, my last drink was. Oh God, it's been 11 years now.
Oh wow. My God, that's amazing.
No, has it been 11 years? March 10 years, March 2011. So that was my last.
Wow.
Drink. So well, I had my last drink long before then, but like I had gone out on somas at one point and was for like 3 weeks. It was like I got in a car accident, things went bad. I did that, and then I was like, oh wow, this is fucked up. So, yeah, so that was, you know, just something changed for me at that point where it was like, okay, this is different. And, you know, and the journey of sobriety for me, it's like not about and anymore about arriving at this destination of like, here I am. Now it's like, oh, this is just the constant work, right? The
totally.
Constant questioning of ourselves.
Of course. I am approaching. Of course, it's always one day at a time. I'm approaching my 3-year birthday. And, you know, there's so many moments where I think, what did I do right in the time that I was drinking for my rock bottom to look so differently than a lot of people that I sit in rooms with? And, you know, they do the work every day. And, you know, some of these people have 24 hours under their belt. Some of these people have 24 years under their belt. And, you know, to me, it's so humbling because it's the same. We are all one drink away from having everything go wrong. So I look at you.
Yeah, because I always, you know, people be like, hey, you want a drink? I'm like, no, I don't think anybody here wants to get arrested tonight.
So. That's what she says.
I'm like,
she says, I'll burn down your restaurant.
Like, if you want your restaurant burned down.
Were I to start drinking now, it would be balls to the wall. It's like, it would be, you know, because I was looking like, what's the point of a glass of wine? I want a bottle. I'm like, oh.
That's this one.
Most people don't think like that.
Yeah, most people don't think like that. No, normal people are like, had a stressful work day. They have a glass of wine. They go to bed. Me, we are off to the races. And
oh, yeah, we're winding up somewhere, possibly Vegas, Miami. Who knows? I mean, I've done one-way tickets to places and been like, when are you going? I'm like, I don't know.
Who knows?
Like, who does that? You know what I mean? And it was the constant chase. And I think throughout my 30s, I also, and the pandemic too. I mean, I'll be really honest. It was awful and it was really hard. But in some ways, it forced us all, forced me particularly, to slow down.
Totally. Yep.
And start reevaluating me. And the pieces of me and what pieces of me are at the forefront and what my priorities are and all of these things that I realize, you know, sometimes when I stay busy, I can just distract myself from that.
Yeah, you get to have time by yourself. What's working? What's not working? You know, we were stuck by ourselves. And I had a similar experience.
My committee, it was really, there's so much going on.
So much going on. like a freaking roller coaster, like you just right. talking yourself into all of these thoughts. So I can relate to you saying that during quarantine. So then flash forward to you pick up when you said your oldest is 14. Correct.
13. She just turned 13 in April. Yep.
And then you're a
full teenager. And my younger daughter, Beatrix, is she just turned 11.
So that's got to be so. First of all, you just said you were. How old did you say you were? You dropped it.
39.
That I'm shaking in my Nikes because I like you. You look like a child. You look good, girl. Good for you. I mean, you look amazing.
Well, I literally showered. I put no makeup on. I apologize. It's, you know, just me in the face.
No, never apologize. So, I mean, what are your...
People are like, what have you done for your skin? I'm like, I don't know. I smoked for years. I did a lot of hard drugs. And don't wear sunscreen. I don't know.
Good genetics.
Yeah.
Good genetics. What do your kids think about... Like, do they watch your show? Like, what do they think about this? I'm so curious. No desire.
My kids are, for the most part, relatively unimpressed with the fact that I'm on a show. I think really the thing that they liked most about coming to set was craft service. They didn't give a shit about what I was doing.
Right.
They were just like, ooh, sushi on a Friday?
I'd be impressed by that craft services, too. I usually see bananas and Doritos.
They enjoy the perks of it sometimes, for sure. But it's also, you know, at the same time, it's hard for them when I have to travel. My younger one, you know, when I have to go away for 3 weeks to do a TV movie or whatever, she hates it. It's hard.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they're just like, oh, my God, this is it's so weird. But it's also always been their existence. Well, not entirely, because most of the time that I have, you know, I have my kids, and they were pretty young when I started back to Fuller House and doing all of that.
Right.
So, you know, they had some experience of like just normal life, you know, one bedroom apartment we're all sharing.
Yeah.
And, you know, now they've gotten to see some of the fun perks of this. So I think they like that for sure. But at the end of the day, I'm mom. I have rules. I yell at them. Like, I'm so not cool. It doesn't matter. Like, blah, blah, blah. You just told me to clean my room. I hate you. So,
right.
Yeah.
That's most of what it is.
Let me ask you this. So 5 years, you come back. The show comes back. Everybody's older. Everybody's more grown up now. Bob Saget's a friend of mine. It's just the whole thing's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I just think I have a show Power on Stars and a lot of spinoffs, and you know, we've never come back. We're just still doing. But I'm just trying to, before you came on, I try to think about like, wow, fast forward 7, 8, 9 years, how exciting that has to be to bring back the family and go back and do it again. What is the most fun part about you being back? Besides the fact that you're old enough to appreciate it, probably now. What else is fun about it?
Yeah, I appreciated it when I was young, but I think having had things as a kid and built up that, and then not having things and being like I said,
real life,
one bedroom apartment with two kids, and you know, trying to figure it out and do all that, like, and then being able to kind of come back, and then being in a pandemic. You know, all of those things have given me perspective that I wouldn't have had it been difficult or not difficult, rather.
Right.
But coming back with all of these people who we've stayed friends for, I mean, we've all been super close for 35 years.
Oh, my gosh.
That's amazing.
I mean, other than my parents, I don't have a lot of memories with anyone else in my life for
besides
longer
them.
Than I do the Full House cast.
Yeah. That's really neat.
And we've always stayed in touch. You know, sometimes we're together more than others, but we've always done dinners on a regular basis. We've always talked to each other. I mean, Bob and John are like brothers, literally.
Wow.
Dave and Bob knew each other since they were 19. I mean, look, you know, it's just there's so much love in that family, and coming back was like...
It's like a reunion.
We need to come back and have fun and like play with our friends and make a show and do this all over again.
And now you get to see, you have new kids that are a part of the show where, you know, they are where you once were, you know?
Yeah, I was really close with Elias, that played Max on the show. Because he was about my age. He was the one that was the middle kid, about my age that I was when he started, and 13 when he ended, you know, all of that. And he and I just connected, and I really understood that. And it's such a different thing to be the adult in the room now and be the one that you know, along with Candace and Andrea, sort of felt like we're responsible for
yep.
the tone of this set and how this works and how these kids are treated wow. and how, you know, and how we work.
Things have changed.
And we just brought that family of Full House right to that and to those kids. The kids were a part of the family. You know, I missed them terribly.
My question.
I'm so proud. One's off at college. It was, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
Did you film or tape or whatever, film, tape, it in the same studio that you did the original?
We did.
Oh, my God.
Well, the first six seasons of Full House, we were on the Sony lot in Culver City.
Yeah.
Then the last 2 years, we moved over here to Warner Brothers.
Okay.
And we were on stage 24 for those last 2 years.
Wow.
And when we first, the first season of our show, we were on a different set, actually. We were on a smaller one. We had trailers outside and all stuff. The second season, we got to come back, and we came back to stage 24 to the dressing rooms
no.
of like the little two-story apartment dressing rooms yeah. that they had built on set. We were the first ones in them.
Wow.
Wow.
And now, you know, I had Dave Coulier's old room. Candace had Bob's old room.
Oh my gosh, you know, that's like, amazing.
Elias had my, like, the school room was now this, but we knew, I mean,
all
I grew
places.
Up in those hallways. I knew every inch of that set. I could go walk it in my sleep.
That's so cool.
And
that's
so cool.
That's really
back
neat.
There again, and then, and also getting to say goodbye on that set again.
Wow. Wait, tell me about the season finale. What was that day like, and what was that final bow like?
You know, it was hard, but in a way, it was easier for me the second time, only because the first time as a 13-year-old girl, I had this fear that I'd never see these people again and that this was it and that family was done and I had no connection to them anymore. This time I got to say goodbye to my family of 35 years in a way that was like, we did it again. I'll see you guys soon, you know, right. But it was also heartbreaking because again, we had built another family of, you know, it's not just the cast, it's your crew and our
yeah.
crew was so amazing. Every department, I loved them all. I was friends with them all. Like, I dearly enjoyed being with these people so much of my life. And it's hard to say goodbye to that. Mm. But it was just a different perspective of like, I'm just in shock that we got to do this again for
yeah.
5 years, you know?
Yeah. Amazing.
It's like it would feel like hitting the lottery twice, you know, because it's hard enough to have a show on the air for a year, let alone a hit epic show that stands the test of time.
Twice.
Comes back twice. It's like hitting the lottery
yeah.
twice.
Yeah.
But so I can tell in your the way you talk about it, you have such an appreciation. And then the second time around, it's like, I really got to, like, because as a child, you might have never got to understand the level. You know what I mean? Except you got to do it as
right.
an adult.
It just, it's your existence. It's the only one you've ever
correct.
Known. You're normal. You're
correct.
Like, this is what it is. Like, I get up, I go to half day in school, I, you know, get lunch in the car, I work on my lines, and I show up to my job. And
correct.
I go home and do homework in the car, and, you know.
But
that's
this,
normal.
But
like,
this time, I could tell you really soaked it all up, the 5 years. I think that's really neat. And I really did.
I really, really did. You know, I stood in that, I remember walking onto the set the very first time and looking at the house again. And it was exactly like walking into your old house that you grew up in.
Wow.
And you notice the little changes. You're like, oh, the alcove's bigger. Oh, that's different. Oh, they put a laundry room there when that was just an exit. Oh, they did the, you know, oh, this counter wasn't this big.
Yeah.
Or like the things that you absolutely know about your childhood home.
Wow.
And walking into that again, it was it's a really incredibly emotional moment. And
wow.
the cast went over there together.
Oh, wow.
To go see the set for the first time right after our very first table read at Warner Brothers. And we all decided to walk over there together as a group. And it was like,
it was magical.
We all had tears running down our face.
How could you
know?
Not
walk back in the home?
Okay, who's the softest of the cast on the last day? Who I mean, I know you all were emotional.
Like, who loses
who
it?
Who lost it? Who lost it the most? Like, who?
I did.
Wow.
It was really
wow.
interesting because I'm not a
You come across tough.
Person.
Yeah.
Jody, you come across tough. You come across tough. So, like, but you are the softest.
For sure. I am not, like, I'm not an emotional person. I'm not, like, I'm a tough nut to crack in that regard. Like, it's not, I'm like, oh, that's too bad. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, but at the same time, incredibly empathetic.
Yeah.
And like, I feel stuff really deeply. So I think it comes out because I'm like, nah, this is, I gotta keep it all up.
Yeah, too much.
But Candace had been crying like the 2 weeks before. Andrea was crying all that week. Like, and there were moments for sure that we got like emotional together during that whole week. But man, when I went out to shoot that last scene, I could barely say my lines.
Oh,
and afterwards, I just sobbed. I really cried. And I remember Elias, I went right to him because he was just a wreck. And I remember that. I remember that.
Wow.
As a kid, and I just stood there and hugged him and held him and, you know, and just sobbed and cried. Like, I've all the pictures from that night, I'm just bright red and crying. And it was sadness that I'm not going to get to do this every day because I loved the routine of it. I was so happy there. But it was also just this immense wave of gratitude.
Yeah.
That's that great. I got to do that and experience that and travel with this family to Japan and go do that and travel with them here and go, you know, I was crying because I thought, wow, what a life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, every time that I think I know how it's going to be and this is going to be what it is forever, it isn't.
Right.
And that's a great thing, and it's also a painful thing, right? Is that, you know, the only constant in life is change.
Right.
But standing there, it just, I felt so much, and my kids were there, and my parents were there, and, you know, Candace's family, and Andrea's family, and these parents, and you know, aunts and uncles in the original cast, and people that had grown up with us, now with my kids, now with our kids, now with our parents, like, it was a generational moment.
Oh, I would have lost my mind too.
And I think I would be hard pressed to say that there are very many shows like that.
No, I'll agree with you.
No, doesn't exist anymore. I mean, it's rare. It's rare.
Yeah. And to have a set where it's, you literally have three generations of family.
Yeah.
That all know each other. Bob, you know, they all know my parents and Andrea's and Candace's parents and our kids. And, you know, it was like a family reunion every Friday night on tape nights. Everybody's husbands and kids and this and that.
Oh, my gosh. That sounds so fun.
That was what I loved. That energy. It was wonderful. It was wonderful to watch and a really special thing to be a part of. And I knew it.
But, you know, it's even on my movies. All the things you just discussed, I get, like, a little feeling of that every movie I make. Like, you know, you're 2-3 months of pre-production, 3 months of shooting. It's like an 8-month thing.
You get to know people. Yeah.
Right. But what you're talking about is decades of friendship, of growing up, of evolving.
And with your movies, sometimes, you know, it's like you don't shoot with the same people every day.
No,
I mean, this was a cast that they were shooting together.
But you do create this little
bond.
I always say this business, you know, I love it. We're a bunch of carnies.
By the way, Jody, I say that to everybody. We are exactly that. We come into town, we set up the tents, we put on the show, and then it's over. And it's like, you know, sometimes you get to go back with the same people, but not always. Where your situation, you're talking about decades of friendship, of growing, of seeing each other have families, and then getting to do it again for 5 more years. That is a blessing at the highest level. You're a lucky, lucky person.
I am for many, many reasons. And I don't forget it. You know, gratitude, like we learn in sobriety, but just in general, like looking around and being grateful for what I have, and then turning that into the fight and the passion that I have for others. You know, I really, I know I've been really lucky in a lot of ways. And, you know, I don't take that for granted at any moment.
You can definitely tell. You are amazing to talk to. I'm so appreciative that you took time to be on our podcast.
Very, very.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Yeah. So nice to talk to you guys.
Yeah, no, this was great. I really enjoyed it. I think that people, we're all fans of this show, whether you're old like me and you're fans of both versions, or you're nostalgic like Lala and you're fans of both versions.
Right?
Exactly.
It's the 90s kids.
Of course. I'm a 90s bitch.
My boyfriend's older than I am. He's 51. And so we have that same. There's like just enough of an age gap sometimes where he's like, yeah, no, I wasn't into that. I'm like, what? You didn't know about, you know? We that was everything. And he's like, yeah,
now
I'm just
kind of
old for that.
And
I'm like, oh,
okay.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's like your age is showing. Yep, there's the gap. Didn't realize it until
anything
now.
Anything from like Nickelodeon, Are You Afraid of the Dark, all that stuff. He's like, no.
Yeah, that's insane.
I was like 21 already and drinking. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. That's amazing. It was such a pleasure to talk to you. We hope to talk to you soon. You're awesome. Yes. Thank you, my love.
Thank you, Jody.
Absolutely. Thank you, you guys. It was a pleasure.
Bye, babe.
Bye.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just been handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.